North Korean army, not by the government in Pyongyang. The entire civilized world has been attacked by a fanatical group of, well, they're fanatics. What else can we call them? More grumbling and muttering from the audience. The giant beast out in the shadows was starting to growl. The president held up both his hands, palms out, and the beast quieted. The regular North Korean army is rounding up these dissidents. They'll be captured and dealt with by North Korean justice, which I may tell you is a lot tougher and swifter than our own. He hesitated a moment. But before these fanatics could be captured, they launched two more missiles toward America. We have every reason to believe those missiles were armed with nuclear warheads. Now they really stirred. But the president grinned and, raising his voice slightly, told them, "Now the good news! Both those missiles have been shot down. We're not entirely sure where they were aimed at because they were shot down within a minute or so of their being launched. They might have been aimed right here at San Francisco. They might have been intended to kill me and you. But they were both shot down by an American plane flying over international waters off the coast of Korea. That plane was armed with a high-power laser, which destroyed both those missiles within a minute or so after they were launched. So, the good news is that we have a missile defense system that works. The North Korean fanatics who launched those missiles are being rounded up and will be swiftly punished." They broke into applause. The audience rose to its feet like one single organism and cheered, long and hard and loud. The president stood before them in the spotlights, smiling his boyish smile, thinking that the next thing he had to explain was that the North Koreans were in no way associated with Islamic terrorists. "I don't want this to spill over into a new war in the Middle East," he told himself. "We've got to avoid that, by all means." Washington, D.C. Foggy Bottom. The rain had stopped. Cool moonlight beamed down out of a silver-clouded sky. The Secretary of State watched the clouds gliding across the moon as she listened to the president's speech on the little plastic radio one of her aides had placed on her desk. His voice sounded scratchy, tinny, streaked with static. Cross-country television had been down since the commercial satellites were knocked out, but radio reception was still serviceable. Sitting before her were General Higgins, freshly shaved and wearing a new crisply creased uniform, Zuri Coggins, looking wilted in the same red jacket suit she'd been wearing all day, and that annoying Jamil fellow with his sliver of a beard and his dark, probing eyes. Farther back in the room sat a trio of her aides. The secretary had forbidden them from making a transcript of this impromptu meeting, but she knew that her personal assistant had set up the digital recording system in her desk before she'd gone home for the night, and no one else had access to it. "I'll be able to review what we say here, but no one else will," she reassured herself. "If necessary, I can erase the record entirely." The roar of the crowd sounded in the little radio like surf crashing on a rocky beach. "They like what he has to say," Zuri Coggins murmured, to no one in particular. The Secretary of State saw that although Coggins's clothes might be wrinkled, the woman herself was still intense, still sharp, her eyes bright, her attention focused on the president's words and the crowd's reaction to them as she sat hunched slightly forward in the big leather chair. "He hasn't mentioned China," muttered Michael Jamil. The Secretary of State flared inwardly. "There he goes with that China business again." But she smiled.